Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rock That Relationship. What a fun season we're doing. I mean, this whole season is all about past life relationships. I mean, how cool is that, right, Tracy? I mean,
yes, it's very cool.
You sound so enthusiastic. It's about our past life relationship mostly, but we get a chance to talk to some great folks out there who can really kind of help us explore things around past life relationships today. So we're excited to have our guests on, Jill Hewins from, at the time she was doing some past life regression work, and I actually went and saw her doing past life regression work. And so we're so thrilled to have you on the show, Jill. So thank you. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Awesome. I'm happy to be here. I recall our session. It's been a number of years. And for now, I'm taking just a slight break from the work. I did it for about 10 years, and so now I'm just taking a slight break.
Well, maybe this is great. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you actually got started in this work.
Yeah.
What's your story?
So, you know, in the late 80s, Dr. Brian Weiss came out with a book called Many Masters, Many Lives. And prior to that, I had worked with spiritual teachers. I'd been in Buddhist practices. I was always digging for a deeper sense of what's it all about? Why are we here? Things like that. And when I read that book, it was just one of those big wow moments for me. And I didn't do anything with it at that time. I don't think people were offering that work until really deeper into the 90s is when past life regression work kind of emerged. But it seemed like magic when I read that book. Mm-hmm. And I would say that just sort of prepped me for coming into the work, which I did about 10 years ago. And I decided to do a training. There are basically three lineages in this work. Dr. Michael Newton, Dolores Cannon, and then Brian Weiss. And so you pick a lineage that you align with the most. And mine was the Dr. Michael Newton, and his number one person that he worked with, which was Dr. Linda Bachman, and that's who I did my training with. Just for perspective, I also went off and did traditional hypnosis training. I've done some other trainings with other people that have come out of those three and created their own niche. Mm. And that is just my personality. I like to sort of get involved in a variety of paths and ways within the work. But what really drew me to the work, honestly, is there's one human in my life that I have known since I was in high school that just kept popping back up into my world. And I always felt responsible for her. There was something I was supposed to do. I was supposed to take care of her. I was responsible for her. And yet, every interaction caused me a lot of suffering. And so, going into this work really that's what drove me into the work. And my first session for me was profoundly eye-opening. I knew immediately. I was in the middle of the session. I knew immediately I'm going to offer this work in the world. It's that profound.
Wow.
So I got a lot of insights there. I continued to do other sessions where I got more insights. I have an understanding with that person about what drives me to constantly feel as though I need to take care of her and be responsible for her. And I've really worked on letting that go, which is key. Yeah.
Wow. I have a lot to say. Okay. I'm just wondering if I have to stick to the questions
I
first.
I told you, Tracy, I said, all you have to do this episode is really stick to the questions. And Tracy's like, does that mean I have to stick to the questions? Yes.
I have questions.
Okay, well, like, ask other questions, yes.
No, can I ask follow-up questions?
Of course you can, yes, but then we have to come back to my list.
Okay, but this is so interesting because you were young and you felt this need to take care of this person, right? And then you say to work through it. So you felt a need to do this, but you're not actually supposed to do it. Like, you're now trying to not take care of her, even though, because even if it's a past life thing where something happened and you're trying to, I guess, rectify that in this lifetime, you feel like we don't have to. Like, if we have a karmic partner or something, do you feel like we don't need to see that through or fix the past life stuff? Or are we supposed to fix past life stuff in this lifetime?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. For me, this is my understanding of it. Within a session, as a client, I was able to get an understanding of what drove that part of me into this belief. And I believe it's a wounded part of me from another time that the two of us were together in a tribal scenario, and all of our people were killed. And we survived because we were off playing away from the tribal area. Mm. When we came back, we were looking and waiting for all of the members of the tribe to come back. Mm. And we waited for quite some time, what felt like a year. It may not have been that long, but when you're in the regression itself as a client, when it is emotional, when you are feeling what's happening, it's long and it feels very real. So we waited, we were starving, we were young, we were very young girls. And when we came out, we were put into a boarding school. And in that environment, she lost her mind. And I lost her in that environment. And for me, I felt as though I had failed. So the wounded part of me carried that sensation, that belief, all the way through that lifetime. And ironically, we met in boarding school in this life. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting and yet not surprising turn. So in this time, that it was an underlying sort of pull for me always. Now, when I was 15, I didn't know what that was. I just thought, this person feels like family to me. This person also still has mental health issues. And that has made it very hard to stay connected over the years. So the wounded part of me has come back every 5 or 10 years trying to reconnect in this relationship where I try to help and rescue and all of those things. But it never works. And it's because, this is my belief on it, I used to think I had to heal this. I had to figure this out. But now I really do believe, no, this is about getting to a boundary within myself and recognizing I'm not responsible for this other human's happiness in life. And I have to allow that to unfold the way it does. That's probably the healing part for me. Now, is it hard? Yes, because that pull is always there. I always feel like this is a family member. So I think actually I believe that I'm on the right path. I think the unhealthy path is constantly trying to keep that friendship alive, that relationship alive. And we're okay on the other side. We're just not okay here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and we can talk some more about that down the line
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what you're saying about kind of this lifetime is the healing is knowing more to let that go rather than fix.
For me.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was for me.
Yeah. It's so mm-hmm. fascinating.
So that can be different for different people though, right? Like some you really need to fix it.
Yeah. And just like all relationships, mm-hmm. you got to have two people wanting to participate. Two people wanting to have a healthy exchange and a continuous exchange. If the other person isn't willing to play, you can't force it. And that's
right.
where, you know, bad habits, codependency, all that kind of stuff can play itself out until you kind of wake up and go, okay, wait a minute. I'm not responsible here.
Right.
Yeah. Takes time.
Mm-hmm.
I just also wanted to say that we did interview Carol McGlinchey, who is Brian Weiss's, I think she was his she worked with him closely.
She was a protege of him. Yeah, she was
yeah,
really interesting.
But she worked actually with him.
Yeah.
What's interesting?
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was just going to say what's interesting when you think about this type of work, this style of hypnosis, which is what this is, it came out of traditional hypnosis practices. And often what was hypnosis, that was, you know, I want to lose weight. I want to stop smoking. It all works on the same principles though, which is you've got to work with the rational mind to relax it. And then you embed, if you're doing traditional hypnosis, you're embedding new thoughts into the subconscious or, I mean, it's conscious, but you're pushing it in over and over and over to try to negate some of the negative patterns or thoughts. But you've got to relax the rational mind before you can do that. This is the hardest part for people, is relaxing the rational mind. So anyway, all of this work came out at the same time. I mean, they were all in the 70s. Mm. Brian Weiss, he put his book out in 88, but he'd been dabbling with hypnosis way before that. They were all kind of afraid to put it out there.
Right.
But it all came out around the same time. And now you can find it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, people still do laugh at us, but okay. So, they think we're crazy, but, it's the weirdest thing. We can talk about this later, but ever since I've gotten into this stuff, I'm 100% certain. Like I've said things to people that like I didn't even think about before I said it, that I was sure that this had happened. And like, mm-hmm. it's not even like in my known mind as Tracy A. Wood, right? It's just in there as this person who's been, I believe, in many different lifetimes. With all the past life regressions you've done, like, are there any themes or patterns that emerge?
Yeah. So, you know, I used to keep a list. I think it's about 500 now. So I could say I can come up with some pretty common themes that I see. And I'll tell you the most common. Most of us have mundane past lives.
Hmm.
Most of us. Most past lives, most of all of our lives, are always about relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
That is the primary thing that we're doing in this. While we're here on the planet, we are dealing in relationship with other people. That's really kind of the primary theme. And then when I do the work, my style in the Michael Newton tradition, you allow a lifetime to emerge, and then you see if you can explore that lifetime. If it, for me, if it doesn't, we move on, whatever scene emerges for people. And then you take it to its end, and the person does pass out of that lifetime, and then they emerge into another state. Sometimes we call it the higher realms, but that makes it sound like it's better. I would say it's more expansive. And then we tap into the wisdom that is there. But in general, the themes really are about, well, what I described to you with my friend, which is understanding that I had a belief that I was responsible for her. And I carried that. I am aware of several lifetimes where I carried that. I just gave you the primary life where that belief embedded into me. And so there were plenty of times where I didn't work that out, where I lost myself in trying to take care of someone else. So I would say those would be the primary things that I notice. And then there are lifetimes where people will have a bigger soul purpose, and it generally comes through, but it's not about what you do. It's more about a state of mind or a feeling place. That's what has come through for people. Things like opening the heart of others. You know, it's very broad, but by being an open-hearted being, and that's kind of a primary soul purpose. It's not, I'm going to write 6 books. Things, that's been my experience with people.
What's interesting for me about this is, like, I literally have, like, felt like my entire life is just about relationships with mm-hmm. people. Like, you know, people are like, you should write a book, you should do this, you should, and I bounce from career to career to career, and I don't really care. It bothers everybody else, but I don't care because I feel like the only reason I'm here is for relationships, you know?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And it's disturbing to other people, but, like, I feel like that's, at least this lifetime, that is what I want to master, our relationships, you know, and finally getting to healthy, good ones. And it is interesting because you're put through so many really rough things. I mean, not everybody, but some people, like, to get to a certain point. And I feel like now I'm 55. And since I was 50, it's like my whole life has started to change in a much more positive way. And I'm much, much happier human being than I was in the first 50 years, you know, and I've let go of a lot of that stuff. And a lot of the things that happened to me, I do think had a past life connection or something that I had to work through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say just noticing your themes too, right? Mm-hmm. In your relationships,
mm-hmm.
where are the patterns? Where do you do things that, you know, aren't healthy for yourself, but you do them and then you catch it afterwards and say, okay, where did that come from? Well, mm-hmm. a lot of it did come from your subconscious.
Right.
Which can be embedded from your family in this lifetime, but you can also carry that pattern with you from previous times. Yeah.
We talked about that with Tracy. We just called it the wounded deer syndrome, where it was, you know, somebody is in distress. And I'm not talking about somebody on the side of the road with, like, an injury, but, like, just somebody is in emotional distress. And for whatever reason, she's just like a magnet to them, helping them or trying to.
Not anymore.
Their distress. But we've had to work through a lot of that because, you know, I'm like, I have relationships with these same people, and that's not at all what our energy is. And I'm like, there's something you're doing here. So I think about.
But all that, those relationships were actually constructive for me to deal with the things that have happened to me in this lifetime that were very painful from a much younger period of my life. And honestly, having those, which bothered Corey because she, you know, was like, oh my God, what are you doing? But it helped me to work through so that I am, like, people don't know this, but, like, I'm the happiest I have ever been in my life. And now I'm actually in a super, super happy relationship where there's literally no conflict whatsoever. Yeah. And that's the first time in my life. And I do believe it's because of all this work and that I had to have other people in to learn from those relationships, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So Jill, let me ask you a follow-up question to this. Like in your situation where you talked about sort of having this enlightenment of this idea about this friend that continues to kind of come back and in previous lives and this life, and you realize what that feeling was that you had, and now you're working through it. Is it so that when we kind of have that epiphany or that understanding of what that dynamic is, and we sort of work to change that dynamic, that we may not see this person again in another life because we don't have this kind of unfinished business? Or is it just that the dynamic is different in future lives? Like, will this person still be with us as we move forward?
I mean, in my situation, I am personally aware of at least 9 times that we've been together in various iterations. I have also seen us in the soul, in our soul home, so away from the earth plane, in that dynamic, and there is a healthier exchange. I would guess that no, we are probably still connecting in any future times. I can tell you that the human me says, oh, hell no, I'm not doing this again, because yeah. It is so painful. For me, it was incredibly painful because I had that strong sense that we are family. It felt very tribal. And you don't leave. You don't leave people behind. So it's been a very agonizing, difficult journey for me to release. It really has. Wow. And I've done a lot of deeper therapy work on it. And now I also had to look at my own codependencies, which, you know, there's the past life experience and that drive internally, but then there's also me as a human being in this life who learned from my family to be very codependent. So that comes into play as well, which means I can make this dynamic even worse if I play into that.
Right.
Yeah. And keep creating, if you want to use the word karma between us, but just keep spinning us deeper and deeper down the karmic rabbit hole.
Wow.
So I would say we probably will be. But right now, today, I can tell you that I'm saying, oh, no, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that is super fascinating. I wanted to share with all the listeners here that, you know, I had a session with you probably 3 years ago now. And I actually had this is my first time I've ever done it, and I had a pretty vivid experience. I mean, I only really explored two lives, and I definitely know that I've had more than that. But two lives, still not entirely sure why those were the ones that popped up that day. One of them, I was some type of a writer in the 1800s. I think I lived in a boarding house. I brushed a horse at some point, which is very odd because I'm not a fan of horses in this life. So maybe if we would have let that play out, that horse might have kicked me in the face or something. I have no idea, but that didn't play that life out. But the other one, I was a businessman in New York City in the 1960s. I literally could feel the clothing on my body of wearing the very thick suits and the hat and carrying the briefcase. And I remember the loud noise of the rushing cars in what looked like maybe Manhattan at the time. It was very, very interesting. But there were some things that really stuck out to me. I had some people came up that I already knew were sort of in my soul circle. I already knew that I had a connection with them in some way because I could feel it before I even did this. One was a friend who was my wife in that life. And then the other one was my dad. My actual dad in this lifetime was my son in that lifetime. But I think one of the, you know, I mean, I could get into all the details. It was very profound for me. And I have done some processing of it since. But one of the really interesting things that came up was that Tracy showed up. at the very end where I was, you know, had come to my so-called spirit council. And I remember I was in like a, it almost looked like a big old castle with this, the kind of very dirty, dungeony walls and this big, huge table, like you would imagine some kind of tribunal. And she was sitting there, and I had always felt like a connection with Tracy, that she had somehow been kind of a spirit guide for me in some ways. And we joked about that along the way, but she showed up, as someone on my spirit council. And so I had a couple questions for you on this, not even having to remember like what happened in my session, but just thinking about this is, you know, what exactly is a spirit council? Why would it come up in a past life regression? Like for me, I had two lives and then I had this spirit council thing. And then what might it mean that Tracy showed up as one of my spirit guides there? I don't know if you have any thoughts on just kind of how that whole kind of notion works.
Yeah, for sure I do. So remember, when these three primary people, Dolores Cannon, Michael Weiss, Michael Newton, or Brian Weiss, sorry, and Michael Newton, when they came up with the technique, they had a script of how things would roll when you're doing this type of work. And in the Newton, all of them do this, but in various ways, but almost always after you pass, you die in a life, then you rise up into what could feel like the heavenly realms or the ethers. I always call it the higher realms. That's where we then could guide you into meeting your counsel, your spiritual counsel that you would have met with before you came into this lifetime to help guide you on what you wanted to do. But again, remember, this is a technique that was scripted by these early founders of this type of work. And so the therapist is guiding you to that place. Hopefully the ones that people work with are being very open to, if that's not coming forth, they move on to other things. So in your case, we had you step into meeting your counsel as you planned out this lifetime, is what I recall. So you were more in your soul self, not your Corey human self. You were broader in your awareness, and you probably felt that. If Tracy was there, I would say to you, that is Tracy at her soul self, not Tracy, her human self. And the soul self, my experience, most of us only bring in 5 to 10% of our complete soul energy when we're living a lifetime. And there are times where we would ask, how much of your soul energy did you incarnate with? Many times people say 5%. 10%. So Tracy as a soul may be on your council. She may serve in a guidance role. And by that same token, you may serve her as well as your soul self. Mm-hmm. Now, the hardest part for us is understanding when we are in human form, we don't always touch in on that wisdom. We can't always get to the wisdom from the soul. But she might have like threads of it pop in. So hence, she'll have like a knowing and she'll tell you something. And you'll say, where did that come from? And she'll say, I have no idea. I don't know anything about that. That to me usually is that case, unless it's her ego trying to be important. And you would know the difference given your relationship, whether her ego's trying to show you, hey, look, I've got all this wisdom and I'm going to coach you.
Yeah, and I'm not like that.
Yeah.
Just so everyone can know. And we were shaking our heads before when you were saying that about like, I'll say things to her that I have no idea why I'm saying that. And I just also know it. Like, I already know what's in her head, even when she's not saying it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very aware.
And you knew when my mom was going to pass before it even happened, and it was a sudden.
I didn't tell Corey, though.
She just knew.
I just knew it.
But even recently.
I didn't say anything.
I had an experience where I knew there was somebody she was dating that was going to just blindside her and break her heart. And it was nothing that I could explain, like on paper, because everything pointed to that not happening. And I actually evoked tears in my eyes. I felt so overwhelmed by that feeling to, you know, and that was, you know, more recent than my mom. And so we have these moments like that where we know things, we know what each other is feeling. And we also have these very kind of serendipitous paths. Like we're both learning a lesson at the same time. Like we both will go through very different experiences, but the lesson is creating emotional boundaries. We'll go through very different experiences and it's, you know, developing trust with strangers, whatever it is. It's almost like we're on
the same. It's always the same lesson.
It's been
always the same situation, same lesson. Yeah.
15 times for us. Like again, she might be experiencing something at work and I'm experiencing something at home, and it's just the same lesson. It's like we're constantly like serendipitously in tune, and it's been very hard for other people to like wrap their heads around it. And it's, you know, so I don't know.
Well, because most of it is not accessible. Like it's not really apparent, you know what I mean, to anybody else.
So I would just say if you're sharing that with me, I would just say that's such a clear example of soul mates. Now, sometimes people think soul mates mean one person. No, we've got a soul family. Soul mates are in that soul family. And sometimes we incarnate as best friends. Sometimes we come in as mom daughters. Sometimes we come in as partners. But that soulmate connection for you, like Tracy may be one of your primary people that you come into an incarnation with, because you end up uplifting each other. Now, have you had tension between you as well?
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And by the way, I just wanted to say a side note real quick. Even though that lady blindsided me, she did not break my heart, and it led me to meet someone so much better, and I'm much happier. I just want to put that on the record.
Yes.
But you know, that is the interesting thing though, because she knew that I know her mom was going to die. I didn't say that to her. And then she knew that this person was going to blindside me, and she didn't say it to me. And you know, we've had tension. We've also had we've had a mother child dynamic at times where I didn't even say anything necessarily, but I'm like, oh, get off of me. You know what I mean?
And I'm like, a unruly teenager.
Right. That's how she feels about me. And then that's how I feel about her.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is interesting because we're like physically repulsed. Like people when we met were like, why aren't you dating her? You guys are hiking all the time. I'm like, oh, no, gross. Like it is like a magnet, like the opposite. Ugh. Like ick. There's a major ick factor there. And it's not like it shouldn't be on a base. Like if you just saw us, you wouldn't think, oh, that person's revolting or whatever. But they, you know, she's revolting. Sorry. This sounds so mean. like, I mean,
I get it. It's all comes from love.
It, like revolting to me in that way, right? And so I do feel like now, like all the people I've dated, blah, 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 I do really feel like I'm in a soulmate connection now that's a romantic one. And it's so different from everything else I've ever felt, where it is so easy and so great. And the friendship with Corey has been so easy and so great. Yes, we've had tension here and there. But I also think, like, how weird, why did it take us so long? Why does it always take us so long to meet these people?
Well, I'm going to address that in a minute, but okay. I think the tension piece is really important in that it's about how you then work through that tension with each other, because that's where these kinds of relationships can break down for people. And that's what happens a lot with good. I've had deep friendships as well, and then there have been several that have broken down because the commitment wasn't there to keep clearing whatever that tension was, and then working for both sides on our own issues that it triggered. So I just wanted to mention that, but I think, why does it take that long? Well, you've got to mature as a human being. That's really what it is. Until you can get through all those things that all of us go through as human beings, and then getting a sense of yourself, this deeper relationship probably wouldn't have lasted had you met in your 20s. I'm just guessing. I mean, that's generally, yeah.
It is interesting. I do feel like in my current relationship, I have the maturity and the desire to commit. Whereas, you know, had I not had all those wounded deer situations before, you know, it's like everything has changed. People were like, oh, you're in this bad relationships, or these people were crappy to you. But honestly, that helped me so much to see what I want, to figure out how I want to be as a person, right? And not to be the way that I used to be when I was younger, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the way I always say it is you're finding your center so that you're not hooking on to someone else to complete it, or you're finding your center, you're showing up then. And yes, you're going to have places where you slip and you fall into old patterns, but you'll catch it. And that's one thing I do want to say about this type of work. That is the beauty of this work, is you start to see yourself in a much bigger way, less about the human you moving in the world, and more that you are bigger than that. You have more wisdom. You have more insight. For Corey, like, experiencing herself as a man walking through Manhattan and feeling that energy of what that felt like, that changes who she is here in this world. Because she has that sensation and that knowledge that's in her. Does she need to do anything with it? Does she need to tell anyone? No. She's carrying it, though. There's a wisdom that's there. And I think that's the beauty of the work. And you can, I mean, I've received probably 25 sessions myself, and you always get some new insights from every session that you receive. But I also want to just point out, it is less about who you were, less about how important you were, and more about that feeling state when you're in the experience itself, because that's where the gold is. That's what's carrying along with you as a being. It's not, you know, you may have been somebody super important, but that doesn't matter if it's not connected to the emotional thing that you're carrying through. So,
I consider myself to be Buddhist. I do follow a lot of, you know, Buddhist teachings. Do you think, I mean, is this all similar to what Buddhists teach, or is there, I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of regression done in Buddhism, but an understanding, I mean, they blame I shouldn't say blame, but they say everything is karmic, you know, you did this, so therefore that's why this is happening to you now. I think your understanding is a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I would say for me, that's what this work did, is it expanded that understanding to know. I also fully believe this is not a punishing world, even though it looks like it. It can feel, and then that word karmic feels kind of punishing. We could look at it to the positive too, which is I'm receiving resources because of a karmic exchange that I did. But we don't know this. We, you know, when we're in human form and we're in regression, we're trying very, very hard to get the rational mind to just move aside a little bit so we can tap a little more of your soul wisdom. But it wants to run the show all the time. It's poking in all the time. And so anytime we get these insights in this work, we have to kind of look at it and go, this is very profound. This is very interesting. And I have to be careful my ego doesn't run with it. Especially when you get something that feels as though you're important in this life and you've got important things to do. You have to kind of temper that a little bit, because our culture in the U.S. especially wants us to be important. We want to, you know, we want to be at the front. We want to, I'm not saying I don't want all of that, but I'm just saying that's what's taught in the culture. You want to be number one. And so your ego plays into that as well.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to switch gears a little bit because I did have a question that's sort of lingering around some of the technical pieces of the regression. But Tracy, did you have something directly?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I mean, not to be an egomaniac, but I'm not ego-based and I never have been. And I've had positions of power and I've eschewed that. And I do really feel like the more that I learn about that maybe this isn't our one time here, you know, that we're going to learn stuff, like, all I care about is being like a good person. All I care about is doing the right thing. And I do not care for material things. I don't care for any of that. And as I progress in that, I actually feel happier, happier, and happier. And I try to express that to others, you know, mm-hmm. like really what the only thing that matters is like how we feel and what we're doing for other people. And I'm not saying that I've always done that as an adult, but it does feel like that is the most important thing. And the way that karma was explained to me by Bethany, she's our astrologer that both Corey and I have seen, is that it's not for punishment. It's for learning,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And if you get hooked to this notion that karma is to punish. No, it's like to learn, right? So everything, I feel like everything we're doing is just learning, mm-hmm. you know, we're here to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jill, I had a question about this is going to feel really technical. You can tell that Tracy's and my brains are in very different spaces all the time. It's really funny. Yeah. That's why we co-host this thing together.
Right.
In some situations we've been told that like, or I've experienced or we've felt or whatever that, you know, Tracy's my spirit guide for me. But she's also, we've also been in past lives together. So she's somehow maybe in my soul circle. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm a spirit guide for her, or like maybe there's a situation where I've got a couple different people who keep coming up in my life over and over again and trying to figure out, do they know each other? Like, are we in a triangle? Like, are there, so like some of these technical things, you know, and I remember even asking during my regression, I was like, how in the world could I have been a man in the 1960s with a small child who was really my father in this lifetime when I was born in the 70s, like the time span. So like, can people play multiple roles? Can they overlap in time? Like how specific is all of this? Or is it just sort of kind of a big, you know, big cloud of stuff?
I mean, the way I understand it is it is all happening in this giant amorphous sameness. We are here on the planet. It's linear. But when we get outside of that, it's no longer linear. And I don't think our minds can fully understand it, although there is some quantum physics that speaks to this. But my understanding is that, yes, I have heard others, more psychics, say that you can't go backwards, but that's not been my experience in regression work. I've seen people bump around. But again, we're thinking like linear processes. And so I do know that there are times, one of my teachers told about someone that it was incarnate at the same time in different human forms, and she knew of them interacting, meeting each other.
Oh, wow.
But then they moved apart. They walked in the same circle of people. They moved together and then they moved apart. And she said her sense was that's exactly what needed to happen. They weren't meant to be together per se in this lifetime, but they were working on things. So the truth is, none of us really knows. We can hope that we know, and we can think we know. And I think we were gifted this type of work in the 70s and 80s to get more understanding about how the soul works. People were not doing regression work prior to that time. They may have dipped in here and there, but not the way it exploded in the 80s and into the 90s. I believe this has been a gift to help people to awaken more, to get a broader sense of who we are as humans and as souls. But I do really feel like it's important to draw the distinction that our souls are gigantic. And you could almost see it like a funnel, the soul into the higher self and then into me as the human. So it comes down into the funnel. I cannot possibly touch all that wisdom that I carry at the soul level as a human being. It probably overwhelmed me. I also know that I'm doing other things on the soul level besides living in this life as me.
And are you adding to the soul level? Like this lifetime, your wisdom from here, you're just making that bigger and bigger, right? Or like fuller or...
I mean, my belief is what we're doing is trying to connect more and more to the soul wisdom so that we're guided by that. Because it's very easy as we move around the world as humans to ignore the promptings, right? We might get a little knowing, an intuition, a sign, and people often ignore that stuff. But the more you listen, the more you get. And so I think that's really what some of our real work is as well, is opening more and more to that soul wisdom that we carry with us and we have access to, but it's very subtle and it's it comes down into the heart is where, so that's to me where your measuring stick is, the heart space. That's where you connect the most to your soul wisdom, kind of like a pipe. And we can make it narrow or we can make it wide.
Wow. So how do you broaden that then? How do you try to tap into more wisdom?
I mean, we don't like to hear this in our culture, but really it's quieting. It's stopping the banter that's going on and all of the distractions. Think about our world right now is filled with distractions. I went to get my skin checked this week and I forgot my phone. And so I'm sitting in the lobby without my phone and just sitting and waiting for 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, I would just lose my mind. Did you read a magazine?
Nope. They had magazines. And I was just sitting there and I just thought, we used to do this all the time. We used to sit and wait and it was okay. And now we want to distract ourselves constantly. And so right there is a practice right there. I mean, you can do it anywhere go to a coffee shop and don't pick up your phone. Don't pick up papers. Don't look around constantly. Just be present in the space that you're at. But this is hard work. So when you're hiking, if you're a quiet hiker, then take that opportunity to stay quiet and not be so engaged with what's happening around you or talking, things like that. You don't have to do it all the time. Just you're using it as a practice. And then, of course, you can use the meditation practices to quiet down the mind. And for anyone who has a hard time quieting the mind, there are nowadays so much out there. You can listen to binaural beats, which is a tonal kind of thing. And you can listen to tons of things, but the whole goal is to get out of the rational mind constantly pattering at you, even if you give yourself 5 minutes.
Well, it's interesting because I think of quieting my mind while physically doing stuff, and I have ADHD, so that's helpful. But it is, I do feel like the cell phone, while, you know, and all this stimulation that we constantly have, I am starting to be overwhelmed by it. But I also think it's been really helpful, like when you go to stand in line, like back in the day, I mean, people went postal, you know, now it's like everyone's on their phone, so they're standing there longer in line. It doesn't bug them as much. I've thought of that, like, if I did not have my phone to look at, I would be like, hurry up. What is happening? What is wrong with you people? Why are you going so slow? And so I think like there's every tool out there, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that obviously meditation is so good for us. And my therapist has been trying to get me to do it for years. And, you know, I do practice Buddhism, but not that kind. I'm not a Zen, Mahayana from Southeast Asia, but like, it is very hard. It's very hard to do. But as I have gotten more spiritual, it's weird. Like I'm driving, right? And I feel like pieces of like, it's like my mind is like unlocking, or maybe it's putting the pieces together. And it's almost like I'm, I don't want to say high, but like in an, like a happier state of being. And I literally feel like clickety click, click, click. And it's not, it's so like Corey and I are so different, right? So for Corey to accomplish stuff, it's like help for, like the less I accomplish and the more I just am, the happier I am as a human being. And yeah. We're like polar opposites in that way.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I think the key to remember too is that even through all of that, you're human, that human being, this is a mechanism, a machine of some type, the mind. And so then any space you could give yourself, whether it is you're driving and you click out, that's another aspect of who you are that you're touching. And that's what you want to do. You just want to touch it more. So mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe if you have a pool or access to a pool and you jump in the pool and then you're doing some strokes, like, but you're not letting the mind just banter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to touch, because there's so, you're so much bigger than this human experience. But we don't, the human mind blocks us a lot of times from getting to that expansive place.
Because why? The human doesn't want to think that it's inconsequential, or like, you know, this incarnation of me doesn't want to think that I'm not that important because I'll be, you know, I'm part of something bigger, right? Like, or is it we're just, it's like we're in this world that's so concrete.
I think that's what it is. It's just part of what it is. It's mm-hmm. part of the human mm-hmm. mind. It's part of this body. And so we have to work with it. It's not, you know, when I was first meditating in the Buddhist tradition, I was always trying to push away, push away, push away. We don't have to push hard, but sometimes we just have to give space for that. Yeah. But I wanted to say one thing, because I think it's really important when people are practicing on their own, trying to calm and things like that. It is really important that the rational mind get calmed, because you can't change anything until the rational mind gets calmed. And so the ways in which people often do that is that progressive relaxation, moving all the way down every body part. I've talked to people who they're trying to do stuff and they fast forward over those pieces to try to get to the real stuff. Mm-hmm. But truly, until you can get that rational mind to relax, that space, you're going to be fighting it constantly. So it's really worth it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to use something online, to find something that has a little bit longer relaxation piece before they're then doing positive affirmations or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think about when you're talking about this, for me, like the meditation isn't necessarily the what I'm doing, or it's the where I am. So when I'm out walking, even if I'm listening to music, all of a sudden I'll just feel like these surges of just like clarity, and I have to turn the music off because that is distracting to my yeah. almost like what is like a meditative process mm-hmm. that my body just wants to experience, and I'm yeah. denying it by having like music on or a podcast, and I literally stop it and walk and just let things come in. And mm-hmm. it primarily happens when I'm outside and I'm by myself, and I'm usually in some kind of nature place, you know, I'm seeing plants and things. For whatever that is, it just all of a sudden it just creates like this open portal for me, and
yeah.
So I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love being in the natural world, and that is where things open for me as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask just kind of one last question, kind of coming yeah. back to this Tracy and I thing, just to get your take on it. So in the case of like where we believe that we have been in multiple lifetimes together, and the other people in your case, you've had multiple lifetimes with someone, do we show up together over and over to I guess land or finish some unfinished business, like we have something to take care of, or are people in these situations like I almost want to call it like a travel pact, right? Like we've been told by one person that we are jumpers and we go together to a lot mm-hmm. of places that we wouldn't go by ourselves, and that we jump. And I'm wondering, is there something about like a soul companionship that's like, we're going to do this together so we're not alone, or is it really that we just have to keep showing up in each other's lives to figure out why we're doing this, and then we can finally resolve something?
Well, so I think what happens here, you are, you're planning in this lifetime, you're getting ready to come down. One or the other of you may already be on the planet in a human form already, because the timing doesn't matter as much. But the soul portion of Tracy, say, is there with you. She's already probably on your council. And you say, okay, here's my plan this time. I have got to get this figured out. I have worked on it 18 lives and I keep screwing it up. Or I want to get good at this. And then you're communicating with Tracy as a soul and you say, okay, so here I am. I'm ready to do it. Are you in? Are you still committed to helping me? And she says, absolutely. Are you kidding? We do this together. I'm always there for you. And so, yeah, I think it can happen just like that, where you agree, we come in together, and we're working to help each other through things, whatever that is. And you may also have some unfinished karma or business with each other, because we often do. We mm-hmm. often create these things through our actions, through our human foibles.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because I had all of these feelings like when I was very young about past lives and stuff that, I mean, I grew up in Illinois and I didn't have any examples of this, but I just knew it. And I knew all of these things when I was very, very young. And mm-hmm. then you get into your teens and 20s and you just, you know, party, go to college, all that, and you forget a lot of that stuff. And then I think for me, like when I started to get in relationships, I was constantly seeking something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very interesting now that I really feel that I have found that and I have found somebody that matches me in that way. Like, I want to make sure that I keep that, right? And so then I'm like, oh my God, I need to, like, how am I going to ensure this in the next life? Or are we allowed to not come back here and just be like, we're done, man? This place is crazy.
Drop. I did it.
Yeah.
I wanted to stay.
Like,
took me 40 lives.
Her. Exactly.
They do say, and I do believe this, that yes, we have full control over all of that as a soul. And this is probably for another conversation, but there are other places that we go to besides mm-hmm. Earth. And mm-hmm. That's a possibility as well. I think you can choose whether you're coming here or not. Mm-hmm. One thing that I heard from one of my teachers that I think is brilliant is you created the karma as a human being. You got to undo it mm-hmm. as a human being. Because for me personally, I always would say, I do work with a spiritual teacher. I would say, why can't I just do it in the spirit realm? Why can't I just mm-hmm. figure that out outside of this human experience? And she says, it was created in the human realm. You've got to work through it there. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what drives us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. This is brings up, I go to an elephant sanctuary. I try to go every 4 to 6 months in Thailand, and the elephants are all injured by humans, you know, or mm-hmm. some disastrous thing. And they get a lot of human contact at this place, very respectful. It's, you know, mostly through the trained people working there. But I feel like the only way that they can heal and heal their soul is that then they are loved by humans. So humans hurt them. And I feel like if they were to just die, and like they would go into their next life with this hatred for people, you know? And this way, they have so much love, and you see them there receiving the love from the people who are hurt, you know, the kind of creature that hurt them. Mm-hmm. And, like, that is the place that I belong in the world. And, like, to be there, it's like for me to have been hurt by people at the beginning of my life and, you know, younger years, and now to be healed by other people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's what I need. I need other people to heal me to fix that. I feel like I don't mean that in a codependent way, but like, so that I can know that people are good.
I see.
You know, and I was a cop and I saw all kinds of ugliness and I've seen all kinds of things. Yeah. And I think, you know, I can see, okay, there are good and bad, or people acting in ways that aren't good. And the only way I think to fix that and get to a place where you're not hanging on to all of that trauma is with the same kind of creature, you know, like to heal yourself. Does that make any sense what I said?
Yeah, I think it does. I think the other thing I would say too, I really believe animals come more from the angelic realm and that they are actually predominantly here to help us. And so like for you, and I know you're doing this from what you've shared, as you're over there and you're in that environment, is to just keep being with what it triggers in you, you know, all the wounding that you may have had early in this life, and just sort of nurturing yourself in that environment as well.
Wow. Well, then it makes me think on the flip side, like I better not screw up in this lifetime. I better make sure I make all my amends, because like, I don't want to see you again. You know, like,
you know, I will say to you, I feel like that is something that I carried when I first opened into spirituality, and I was a young person. At 5 years old, I remember looking up to God and saying, you know, why am I with this family? Why did you put me here? Why am I, these aren't my people, is what I kept saying. And so from that point on, I was always searching and seeking. So then I early on got introduced to Buddhism and some of the other alternative New Age practices. And I think I carried a lot of, I've got to get everything fixed. But I would say, no, if you can let that go, it isn't the answer. I mean, oftentimes when people are getting accolades from their spirit council, it's over something as simple as you were gracious to the woman across the street who needed her garbage taken out, and you did it kindly, and then you talked to her every day. You know, it's simple stuff that makes a bigger difference than the big things we think make the biggest difference. So if there was any way for you to let that go and just trust that you're on the right path and your intention is good, even when you screw up, it will take some pressure off.
I love that. Wow. Well, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. My gosh, I could talk to you for hours. I did talk to you for hours.
Well, you can tell, for all of us, this is just a opening of a doorway, and there's so much in that doorway that just keeps opening to more doorways.
Yes. And I even remember that is even a literal interpretation of what I went through. You'd say there's three doors. And every time I went through, I learned more and more. But just, yes, absolutely. Just the doorway to wisdom, and this conversation has just been fantastic. You know, kind of wrapping up is, you know, what's on your horizon these days? I know you said you're taking a step back from some of the regression work, like with clients. Are you still doing spiritual work? Or is there still some areas that you're looking at expanding with this? Or are you sort of going in other directions in your life? What's the future looking like for you?
Yeah. So with my very full-time job, I had to pull back from client interactions because I couldn't manage all of the needs. So I'm in that space right now, kind of focusing on my own inner practices. I will tell you, something's coming. It's just listening to that intuitive knowing. Something's on the horizon. It will be something along the lines, though, of like the way I did my work was I called it soul regression work because I didn't want it to just focus on past life. There's so much beyond that. And that's where the real meat of the understanding is a lot of time, not just in who I was and what I did in that life. So it's like the next phase beyond that, helping people who are ready to do maybe some more of this inner pathways on their own, helping them to get to those places, the mechanisms to use, techniques, things like that. It's just building. It's not there at this point, but there is something that's building to that. And why would I do that? Because it's profoundly life-changing for all of us. And that's why I do it, really.
Okay, well, we're here for it. We're all okay. In the same town. Good. So yeah. We're going to bug you more.
That sounds good. Sounds good.
Wow. Well, Jill, it has been an absolute pleasure and honor to be able to just have you on our show. I know our listeners are going to just really find a lot of great wisdom in this episode. And so thank you for taking the time to be with us and beyond our season all about past life relationships.
Absolutely.
Well, awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.